From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. In the days following the November 3rd election, Democrats have wondered out loud why their party didn't do better in the House or the Senate. Congressman Jim Clyburn of South Carolina claimed that activists' call to defund the police hurt Senate candidate Jamie Harrison against GOP Senator Lindsey Graham in South Carolina. Louisiana Representative Cedric Richmond echoed this claim, saying on Face the Nation that, quote, defunding the police is a title that hurts Democrats. Joining me to ask whether that's actually true is Candace Watts-Smith, Associate Professor of Political Science and African American Studies at Penn State University, co-author of numerous books, including Stay Woke, A People's Guide to Making All Black Lives Matter. Welcome to the program, Candace.
Thank you, Sonali, for having me.
So how do you respond to what Jim Clyburn and Cedric Richmond, these are both Black House members. These are, many of them who had backed Joe Biden for president, especially Jim Clyburn. And they're also not new members of the House. They've, sort of veteran lawmakers, if you will. What do you make of their claims that the idea to defund the police, and in fact, maybe the slogan, hurt the party as a whole?
Well, I think there are a couple of things that I think should be pointed out, that to suggest that one policy frame tank the party, I think is unfair and it's inaccurate and it's unnuanced. So we can think, for example, about even just mobilization. There were more people who turned out than ever. I think that the Democrats, for example, probably had a sense that we're going to ride this blue wave that started in 2018. But we'll keep in mind that during the midterm election, Trump wasn't at the top of the ticket, and this time he was. So even just kind of thinking about the context of this election is totally different. I think then, just to kind of put to the side about the slogan, I find that kind of argument, I think it's really interesting. And I think it's part of a pattern, right? That 7 years ago in 2013, 2014, there was this kind of idea that Black Lives Matter was a radical claim. And I think similarly, we're seeing, it took basically 7 years for people to catch up that Black Lives Matter meant all lives matter if Black lives also matter. And so, maybe we need to have a better, more nuanced conversation about exactly what defunding the police means.
Right. That's a really important question because, of course, it's a slogan. It's a catchy slogan. It's a slogan that could mean any number of things. When asked about it, some people have said, well, to them, defunding the police means redirecting community, redirecting taxpayer resources from the police toward community services, because often in many cities, if not most cities around the country, the police is the largest line item of any city budget, and so many other resources are starved. Others would take that further, saying we need to think about ways to abolish the police altogether. So there is a spectrum of opinion. When asked about what he thought of defunding the police, Joe Biden repeatedly said that he didn't support the idea. Trump said that he did, because there was one instance in which Biden was asked about whether he agreed to redirect funding, and Biden said yes. And of course, Republicans are very good at political propaganda. So I suppose we shouldn't be surprised that Biden agreeing with the notion of redirecting funding was taken to mean the equivalent of abolishing police altogether, which for many in America is still anathema.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, here's the thing. I think that redirect funding from the police to social services, it does not make a good slogan.
And doesn't fit nicely on a protest sign.
Doesn't, right? I think that there, some people can say it's a bad frame because it lacks nuance, but we also know that people know what they want to know and they don't know what they don't want to know. So if people were really invested in trying to understand what the actual policy stance is here, they would, as you pointed out, Sonali, the kind of range of ideas that defunding the police is actually a totally different call than abolishing the police. People who want to abolish the police say abolish the police. But I think it's really important to notice that even in the discussion of directing, redirecting funds, I don't think that most Americans would disagree that we should ensure that people live in safety, with dignity, that they are treated well. I think we can all agree on that. I think that most Americans recognize, just like in their own homes, that your budget speaks to your priorities. And if we're prioritizing policing over, say, schools, over just the kind of well-being of the community, if people recognize, how these funds are shifting around, I can't imagine that there are more Americans who actually would say, yeah, I think that we should probably think about how we adjust our funds. So I think that there is actually more common ground around the nuances of defunding the police than many elites, especially those on the right, would have us to believe.
So that brings us to this question of when there are any openings, Republicans will jump to conclusions and try to sell the idea that all Democrats want is socialism, which is equivalent to authoritarianism and dictatorship. And this idea to defund the police, meaning redirect funding to social services, is immediately equated with a dangerous notion of socialism. This is a conversation that's been playing out within the Democratic Party. You've had moderate and centrist Democrats blaming progressives for why they lost races, like Jim Clyburn and Cedric Richmond's claims, Connor Lamb, who was interviewed in the New York Times, Abigail Spanberger. These are the centrist Democrats who are saying that progressives were the reason why the Democratic Party lost seats, and that we should never hear the word socialism again. In response to that, Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who is a Democratic socialist, says that she pointed out that those Democrats that sponsored, say, the Green New Deal or Medicare for All won re-election. And she tweeted, "The whole progressivism is bad argument just doesn't have any compelling evidence that I've seen. When it comes to defund and socialism attacks, people need to realize these are racial resentment attacks. You're not going to make that go away. You can make it less effective." What do you think she means by that? Because in saying that defund the police hurt the Democratic Party, aren't some of these critics essentially saying that the very valid claims of the Black Lives Matter movement are not to be centered, or that they need to be swept under the rug and not taken seriously?
Yeah, I think that I would agree with Representative Ocasio-Cortez said. I mean, the thing is that this idea that progressivism is bad, I think, is inaccurate. What we're seeing here is people are looking for any kind of low-hanging fruit to say, this is why we didn't gain as many seats as we should have. So on the one hand, it's a very simplistic reading of the
lazy reasoning, if you will.
Yeah, it's lazy reasoning. But then also, I think that the calls to say, hey, we shouldn't talk about this, I think it is actually incumbent upon political representatives to inform the public and to allow conservatives and people on the right to co-opt the message that Black Lives Matter and the movement for Black Lives are trying to put forward, I think does a disservice both to Democrats. And we are living in a situation where Democrats and liberals are living in a different world than Republicans and conservatives. The kind of media we consume, the communities that we live in, and it is the role in part of our political elites and the media as well to explain to the public, here is what is going on. Here are the pros and cons. Right. Here are the nuances and the complexities.
And in fact, AOC did say, how do you make these racial resentment attacks less effective? She said, invest in year-round deep canvassing. Data shows that this kind of work helps blunt the force of racial resentment at the polls. If you're always running away from conversations about race, then the only people owning it are the GOP, you'll lose. So I thought that was a very effective argument.
Yeah, I think that's an excellent argument. And research shows, I have a colleague named John Castile, who does work on citizen reviews of different policies. And he shows that his work and his co-author's work shows that when there's a citizen group that is reviewing the different policies, initiative, ballots, referenda, and say, hey, here's what this means. Here are the pros and here are the cons. What do you think? Other citizens who read those reports are more likely to be more educated about it and tend to make decisions that are more progressive in many cases.
Isn't it also true that the Black Lives Matter movement's resurgence this past year, this past summer, especially after George Floyd's police killing, really led to a massive turnout in just the right swing states at the polls? I mean, you're in Pennsylvania and Philadelphia. You had this huge surge of voter registration in Georgia. You've had a huge surge of voter registration among supporters of the Black Lives Matter movement. In fact, in Minneapolis, where the George Floyd killing first sparked a mass national movement, there were voter registration booths alongside protests. And many reports credited the movement for surge in new registrations.
Yeah, I mean, this is the thing, and I'm not really in the business of throwing people under the bus, but to go back to the original question that you asked about, you know, people blaming activist progressive Black Lives Matter for talking about defund the police. So here we have the situation where you blame Black Lives Matter for, preventing some people to be elected. But then on the other side of your mouth, you'll say that this movement helped mobilize millions of people. It can't be both. And so I think that it's really important that we give credit where credit is due. And to note that defunding the police, when we talk about redirecting funds, prioritizing well-being, health, mental health, issues around homelessness and education, these are good policies. And they're the policies that have been brought forth and demanded by, right, this contemporary movement for Black lives.
I want to pick up on our conversation around deep canvassing, basically the need to have these conversations between elections, you know, and the role of propaganda in changing people's minds. In the immediate wake of the George Floyd killing, you know, much of America had seen the horrific and traumatizing video of Mr. Floyd's last moments, and it had a massive impact where for the first time you saw widespread support across the political spectrum for the Black Lives Matter movement. Somewhere along the way, when there were small numbers of windows broken, the narrative changed, and Fox News was able to, you know, turn the Black Lives Matter movement into one of dangerous thugs and looters who are just intent on destroying our cities. And you saw those poll numbers around support for the Black Lives Matter movement slip. This is an important thing that the left and those in the Black Lives Matter movement, those supporting the movement, those calling for defunding of the police, need to address, right?
Certainly. I mean, what are we addressing exactly, right? So are we addressing riots? Are we addressing what people think about the riots? And I think that these are two separate issues. One, if we're talking about addressing the riots, we might want to step back and address why people are rioting in the first place. As far as the narrative goes, I think that it's important to note again that there are media outlets, both on the left and the right, that want to sensationalize, want to sensationalize things that are aberrations. And so
that's what gets attention, right?
Attention. And I think it's really interesting that the same people who would make the argument that some in police, it's one bad apple. In the case of protests, it becomes a whole, it speaks around everyone who's shown up at the protests. So again, you can't have it both ways, right? This is a double standard. If it's a systemic problem, it's a systemic problem. Just call it what it is, or be really nuanced and note that in the case of rioting, there is one, you know, there are a few people who do this work, and we need to think about why people are doing it. What's the rationale? In the case of policing, about one bad apple, I mean, the fact is that, you know, there's a system of policing and laws that we need to address. So again, we need to be more critical thinkers. And so, and
that's what Black Lives Matter, the movement for Black Lives, has called for: a systemic response. Yes, to accountability for police, but broadly speaking, the movement has called for doing away with qualified immunity, for example, in the legal system. That's a systemic response.
That's right. And just to the back to your question about canvassing, about constant education, I think this is a really important point. And for me, part of it is a historical issue that we tend to see in the United States. People get really riled up when really horrific things happen. When people see Black folks on TV, you know, in the 1960s being water hosed and attacked by police dogs. And now there's a, you know, maybe the corollary video of Mr. Floyd's police killing, right? These are images that no one can refute that something is very wrong here. I think that the business of this idea of constant canvassing is really important, because what we tend to see in American politics is that we move about one step forward, maybe two, and then we move a little bit back. And so I think that maybe the idea of this kind of constant canvassing and staying on message and on point and keeping this on people's mind will maybe perhaps prevent this shuffle back, which is kind of what we're seeing in this blaming Black Lives Matter, and this defunding the police idea is already causing, in some ways, Democrats to suggest that maybe we need to take a step back on really important questions of inequality and equity, inequity in this country.
Right. And that's a really big question that goes to the heart of whether the Democratic Party is going to try to be a party that respects its base, that links questions of wealth inequality, racial injustice, wealth inequality that exists, you know, within racial groups, or rather between racial groups, and linking that to the Black Lives Matter movement and what they're calling for in terms of police brutality aimed disproportionately at communities of color, whether they're going to, you know, take those demands, that spectrum of demands seriously, or they're going to keep tacking to the right, to the mythical center of the U.S., where supposedly Americans, you know, love the police and think that they don't see race, and that, you know, they would vote Democrat if they just stopped talking about socialism. This is an existential choice, it seems, for the Democratic Party, because if Biden alienates his base, a very hard won millions of votes that came through for him, if he alienates that base, it's the party that's going to lose in 2022 and 2024, and therefore the country as well, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's really important, maybe even from a moral standpoint, to think about what are our priorities. And are we going to back down on certain priorities in order to maintain political power? Of course, you know, one would say, well, you have to be in office to make change, but at what cost?
Where do you think the Black Lives Matter movement goes from here? There were a number of local victories, propositions here in Southern California, where I'm based, many years of organizing by our local chapter of Black Lives Matter helped bring a change in the district attorney. And you know, have the result in the loss of a seat for a very pro-cop DA, and there have been ballot measures that have supported you know, some of the demands of the Black Lives Matter movement. Do you think that overall the movement made some progress in this election, regardless of whether the party, the Democratic Party, made progress? And then how do you think the movement can build on that in coming elections and in coming months and years?
Yeah, I think that the examples that you give, Sonali, are really excellent ones. And what they do is they highlight the structure of Black Lives Matter, which is to focus on local and state issues. I think that many people are often looking for some kind of national, congressional, you know, major piece of legislation like the Civil Rights Act or the Voting Rights Act. But I think that people in Black Lives Matter recognize that people at the local, one, that most of the issues that influence our day-to-day lives, policing, education, healthcare, You know, all of these things are dictated at the local level, and that's where people should have their attention. The other thing is that, you know, we are probably likely to see that, you know, Biden will be, inaugurated, and that there may be a situation where the Senate is controlled by Republicans. Well, then looking to the national, you know, arena to make major policy changes becomes a smaller chance of any change happening. But change can happen probably more likely and a little bit more easy, and where it affects you more at the local level. So I think that what we're going to see is that these people are going to, that Black Lives Matter are going to continue to do the hard work at the local level, which perhaps is where more Americans should focus their attention anyway.
And we also saw the election to the House of numerous Black young progressives, particularly in New York, with Jamal Bowman and Mondaire Jones, Richie Torres, and in Missouri, Cori Bush, that together with the other members of the progressive young folks of color, women especially, especially in 2018, who won their races, that isn't it important to have allies in Congress?
Certainly. I mean, when we're talking about representation, we want people's interests to be represented. And, you know, Americans have a wide range of attitudes around various policies, and those people should be there to show up. You know, folks in the kind of progressive wing have made really clear, like, hey, we need to have a seat at the table so that we can be part of the negotiating, you know, strategy. And the thing is that no one has said it's all what we want or it's nothing. It's that, you know, I think Representative Ocasio-Cortez said, it's a pleasure, it would be a privilege for me to lobby President Biden. And so it's a, right, so she makes clear here that what her goal is to try to get, you know, she and other progressives is to try to get as much as they can, you know, in this particular arena.
Right. I mean, it's a good problem to have for a progressive to have a Democrat in office to lobby rather than a Republican in office to lobby. You start from an easier position, because just especially because of where the Republican Party has gone, I should say the depths to which it has sunk, which is another topic that that we could cover, you know, spend a whole hour covering, and that we generally cover daily on this program. Candace, I want to thank you so much for joining us today and helping shed light on these issues.
Thanks for having me, Sonali.
My guest has been Candace Watts-Smith, Associate Professor of Political Science and African American Studies at Penn State University. She's written numerous books, including her latest is Stay Woke, A People's Guide to Making All Black Lives Matter. We've been discussing whether calls to defund the police hurt Democrats in this past election. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter, find our audio podcast on iTunes and Spotify.